Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to the Two Geeks and a Noob podcast, with your host, Superbeard Vince Hoover, and his co-host, Jason Q. Perez and Denise Jackson, a podcast for the indoctrinated nerd, the casual fan, and everyone in between. Now, on with the show.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to the sixth episode of the Two Geeks and a Noob podcast. I am Superbeard Vince Hoover. With me, as always, is Jason Q. Perez. He is down. Oh, crap. I forgot I mirrored my thing now. He's down there, so read his name.
I'm over here. I'm here.
There he is. And then I've got, of course, the namesake of our podcast, our resident noob, Denise Jackson. Right below me. I can point down. That's easy. And then to my left, right, whatever. He's on here, so it's Dimitri Pereira of the Geek Show.
I'm here.
He's above Q. He's next to me. You guys can see him.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't know how it all works out, but I assume I'm somewhere on screen.
Yeah. Hopefully. Now that I've decided to mirror everything because my little sign was backwards the whole time. I didn't realize I've mirrored everything. Now I can't remember how to point. But regardless,
the trick is cross your eyes. No, it doesn't work.
That didn't work at all. I just felt weird. I got dizzy.
Yeah.
All right. So, Dimitri, welcome to the podcast. As I've said, you're part of the Keek Show. You and I met through TikTok and then through your after shows, starting with WandaVision, which have been fantastic, especially for an insomniac like me who doesn't sleep anyways. It's great to have a community of people to talk to. So before we jump into what we're going to talk about, which is, of course, the season finale of Loki, Dimitri, give us a little background on yourself.
On myself, well, I'm the host of the Keeg Show. The Keeg is a geek channel. It started off as one show. Now we do multiple shows, I think because of the whole 2020 incident, as we, you know, just staying indoors trying to figure out stuff to do. I expanded the show into, like, multiple shows, which includes the after shows. So, like Vince knows, we did a WandaVision after show. We did a Falcon and Winter Soldier after show. We just finished the Loki after show. And it's, like, just a matter of staying up till the show premieres, watching it, and then, like, jumping online right away and doing, like, an after show with, like, quick thoughts right after. Yeah.
That's neat.
We do a lot, though. And I'm at wit's end, but it's fun. And I'm glad I'm here.
How do they find you?
Who finds me?
Anybody.
Oh. For some reason, I was like, how did they find me? The FBI? Who's looking for me? They
the TVA.
I don't know whether I'm a variant or things are going exactly as planned. I'm not quite sure. They can find the Keeg Show on, well, first thing, we live stream to multiple platforms, but our main platform is volume.com. It's a new streaming platform for like performers, mostly musicians, singers, and that so on and so forth. But they're expanding to like acting, and like we do our niche geek show and, you know, that sort of thing. So we do that on volume.com/thekeegshow. We're also on Twitch, twitch.tv/thekeegshow. And then our podcasts go to Apple Podcasts, Spotify, SoundCloud, Google Play, or whatever that is. So we're all over the place there. And then we're on TikTok and Instagram at the Keeg Show. Those are our big social media platforms.
So how do you spell that?
TheKeegShow. Everybody always assumes my name is Keegan. They assume that the Keeg Show is named after me. I'm not Keegan. It's just geek backwards. It's so hard to brand nowadays. Yeah. And this was like 6 years ago. And I was like, all the good geek names are taken. Let's just turn geek around to Keeg.
That's awesome. You're pulling a Vince with his mirror.
Yeah.
Yeah.
All right.
In Vince's mirror universe.
Yes.
Yeah.
It's the geek. It's the geek show.
It's the geek show.
It's who's geek. If we read it all backwards.
Yeah.
No. Okay, moving on. All right. So welcome again, Dimitri. I'm so happy to have you here. It's kind of kismet. I was there for the WandaVision after show final, the season finale of that, or series finale for that. And then here you are for the Loki season finale. So I greatly appreciate you coming on. So let's jump into Loki. Of course, there was a huge reveal. But before we go any further, before us geeks talk about it, Denise, I need your reaction to that reveal. And I need you to tell me who you thought it was when it happened, and then by the end of the episode.
for me, I was expecting somebody like really prominent. When you see the light come on underneath the door, I was like, dun, 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 who's it going to be? And then this person that I do not know, I'm like, okay, wow. I wonder what is going on here. And you can see how when Sylvie tried to attack him in, I guess, what would be the elevator, and him just getting out of the way real quick, you know automatically that it's going to be somebody that knows what's going on. So I was thinking it was another Loki variant. But now, yeah, I don't know how much do you want me to give away without us talking
about it? No, go right into it. Spoilers galore, people, spoilers galore. If you haven't figured it out already, we don't shy away from spoilers. Just get right into it. I want to know who you think it was. Go. Just go.
Yeah, I thought it was another Loki variant. And I thought it was, I know back in a few episodes, we were talking about King Loki. So I was thinking that it might have been King Loki. But then after watching the episode and immediately when he said Conqueror, I was like, okay. So if I'm correct, he's a variant of the King the Conqueror.
Correct. Now, before doing this podcast, did you have any idea who King the Conqueror was?
No.
And
no.
You've seen every bit of the MCU except for maybe one or two things.
It's never been brought up at all. No.
So this is where I have been fighting on TikTok all day about. Because the whole point that I saw with this reveal, and we talked about this on the after show, Dimitri, was that yes,
right? I'm waiting for you to say something so that I'm like,
yeah,
I don't know whether we agree, but let's talk about it.
For the trip.
Exactly. So I've been telling people there's so many people jumping on the I told you so train so quickly, but what I'm telling them is that yeah, you were right, but you were also wrong.
Exactly.
Because I'm focusing on the right. That's me. The glass is half full. I'm partially right, partially wrong.
Well, I'm partially right.
That's what I'm hearing.
The thing is, like, you're technically 100% right, because it was Kang the Conqueror in a sense. Mm-hmm. But it's like just how Sylvie is a Loki.
Yeah.
You know, and it's just like, but this one was a benevolent one. I think I would say closer in attitude to, like, Q and I talked just before we started. He said like he was closer to Immortus in his attitude.
Immortus.
I would actually say he was closer to, like, Iron Lad, but if Iron Lad had been stuck by himself for millions of years, he was more benevolent than what you would think of King the Conqueror. And the reason I say that is because, yes, it was still a matter of control. It was still a matter of free will's a problem. And the fact that we all got together and we created this multiversal war that in turn almost destroyed everything, I had to put a stop to it. And then he said he lived for millions of lives, which I also, there was a great parallel to me, and I don't know if anybody else caught this, when he said I lived millions of lifetimes, but there's only one outcome that works.
Yeah.
It was very much the Doctor Strange parallel from Endgame.
Yes, which
I liked. And I don't know if that's a bit of a stretch as far as, but I felt like that might have been actually done, like that was said that way on purpose. Mm-hmm. I don't know. Because this,
I really, for sure. Well, they did do a lot of Doctor Strange-ish things in there with the apple, first of all. Like, I felt like that was really pointing towards Doctor Strange. And if you watched him eat it at the desk, he was really like focusing on turning the apple a certain way. I don't know if that meant anything, but that definitely spoke Doctor Strange to me.
It's not the same. It was a green apple, not red. You're completely wrong. It's totally, no, I'm just kidding. I'm just kidding. There's a lot of parallels. Of course, the writer of this show is the writer, the guy rewriting the script for Doctor Strange 2, which they're now filming. But I mean, Dimitri, you can speak on this. Nobody actually knew that Jonathan Majors shot anything for this show, to the point that, like, Marvel has had a hard time keeping secrets, but they've kind of done really well recently in keeping secrets.
His answer was that he had no idea.
Yeah, like, he was only asked, like,
he was pressed for it once, but that was about it.
But also the fact that he was said to be filming something in another country, while this was filming. So did he like fly over, film in secret, whatever? But like, did Marvel figure out some kind of new technique? Because before Endgame, they had a kind of hard time keeping things a secret. And now, and like, again, we explore these shows so deeply on the Keek Show. Like, this is, I would say, at least the second show where we had a reveal that's like, oh. Like, the same thing with Contessa. Nobody, like, I think maybe one person theorized. So, like, what do you think Marvel's doing now to lock it down, I guess?
Well, first things first, did you hear about their recent contract? They're changing the way they're doing contracts now?
I heard something about it, yeah.
They're hiring people for projects as opposed to, like, let's sign you for a 10-picture deal. Wow. And I think they're just going to easily, like, okay, with Disney dealing with, like, Gina Carano, Disney dealing, the way Marvel dealt with James Gunn and then brought him back, the way they're dealing with everything, I think they want to be able to drop people no matter what, right? So I think these actors are now having to, like, be quiet and, like, forced to stay quiet and not leak anything. Otherwise, you're going to, like, go the way of Lady Sif for, like, 10 years. And now, like, I guess she's back. But, like, the point being is...
Yeah,
you could drop these people. So, you know, Jonathan Majors is playing Kang. And like right now, we don't know whether Kang is going to like we know he's going to be in Quantumania. We don't know if he's going to be in anything other than that. And maybe Marvel's like, if Jonathan Majors doesn't play ball, they don't have to put him into anything else other than Quantumania. Let's just say. But like you wanna like play by Marvel's rules.
Yeah.
If you wanna have like if you wanna do 10 movies from this point on, you gotta play by Marvel's rules.
Well, another great thing they've done with this series is they've given themselves an out if somebody does have to be fired. Because then you can just bring in a variant who doesn't have to look anything like the original.
Yeah.
And bam, think you now have an in-continuity excuse to change somebody's casting if something was to happen. If something problematic came up and you needed to change them out, you have, if need be, like they did, obviously with, you know, you had the Terrence Howard, Don Cheadle thing, you had the Edward Norton, Mark Ruffalo thing, they just ignored it. Yeah. But like now, like you don't have to ignore it if you don't want to. Like if it's something you feel you need to address as Marvel, you can address it. So the episode was titled, For All Time Always, which I am wearing my For All Time Always shirt. Yet again, laundry is an amazing thing. So right away, I mean right in the title sequence, in the Marvel Studios title, we got all these different lines from different movies and stuff, and they kind of, and they bled into like real world lines, like Maya Angelou and Nelson Mandela, and all these different quotes. So that we were already seeing this kind of like, blending of a multiverse kind of way just in the title alone. So they really just like kind of like went for it right from the get-go. But I've heard some people say they felt that the entire episode was blah, that it was just an exposition dump and that it was bleh. It wasn't a CG battle fest like we got in WandaVision. It was closer to kind of what we got in say, Falcon and the Winter Soldier, but there was more action in that as well. Let me get all three of y'all's thoughts on the episode itself as far as how it felt. Was it good? Was it bad? Did you feel, you know, like this was amazing? Or So we'll start with Dimitri and work our way around.
I liked the episode. I don't have a problem with it. Also, like, I think it's kind of easy to be a crybaby and be like, you know, like when there was like The Walking Dead, when people were like, there's not enough zombies. And like, then there's like too many zombies, like there's too many zombies. And like, you could, if it was a fully action packed episode, we'd be like, okay, but what does it mean? And I think that like, they're obviously setting up for Loki season 2. Great. We got introduced to a great villain or a variant of a great villain. We got introduced to a great actor playing all the different Kangs that will be to come. And then you got a fight between Loki and Sylvie that was kind of cool. And like, I don't have any complaints there. You got a little bit of like Owen Wilson in it. Like, I don't know. I have no complaints about the final episode. I thought it was a solid ending for the season. As opposed to like Falcon and the Winter Soldier, I felt didn't stick the landing on half of the final episode. One half I thought was good on Falcon and Winter Soldier, and the other half of the ending, I thought it fell flat.
Yeah, I agree with that for sure.
You know? But like for this one, I have no complaints.
Q, what about you?
Yeah, I like the episode as well. I could see where people would feel like it would be an exposition dump, but you know, it's important at this stage of the show. And yeah, there was plenty more to enjoy, including that fight scene. That was good choreography right there. And I'm glad we got to see the villain. Who we got to see. It wasn't, I guess it wasn't the twist exactly I was looking for, but that's okay because, it wasn't a disappointment. And it was really neat how they, Miss Minutes, referred to him as the one above all, even though we know.
He who remains.
He who remains. Okay. Yeah. He who remains. Sorry about that. And that was really interesting. And, he is taking over that role in the MCU. So, pretty exciting. And, the mid-credit scenes, kind of expected more. But that's all in all, still a good episode.
And Denise, what about you? Especially for somebody who's like, again, you're not a big, you're not a comic book person. So for you, it was like, now you have to like wait for answers to a whole second season.
Yeah, but they did answer some of my questions.
Okay, good.
The double watermark that I've been talking about for the past couple episodes that we've been talking about, I liked when she looked down at the double watermark and it was kind of like missing him in a way, and then it cut back to that. That kind of answered that for me. We didn't get the answer as to if Mobius has a variant as well, like it, so that still remains to
we kind of did actually at the end.
When?
Okay, so jumping to the very end of the episode, we did see a variant Mobius.
What?
Loki, when he gets to this new, he gets to the TVA thinking he's in his TVA, and he's running around trying to find Mobius and tell him what's going on, that the multiverse is exploding, it's all happening.
Yeah,
but it's not his TVA. And the key to that scene is before Loki is sent there, you see B-15 and Mobius talking, and his coat's still dirty, his tie's still all askew, and it's a different shade of brown. It's like it's almost tan. When you then see him, when Loki finally finds him, he's in a darker brown suit, tie straightened, it's nice and clean, and they don't know who he is.
Right.
And then of course you look at the statue and it's not a timekeeper, it's He Who Remains or Kang or whoever that particular guiding force is. So whatever version of the TVA that is, that's one where that version of Kang didn't hide behind timekeepers. He very much took the onus. His ego's like, no, this is me. I'm the god here. I'm the one in charge. So what's weird about that, and my only issue, and this is my only plot hole that I found, was that Sylvie sent Loki away before killing He Who Remains, which was what expanded it. But he did say that when he dropped that thing, that it's already started, it's already begun. So maybe that's why, and obviously that'll probably be addressed more. That's how I
perceived it.
It depends. It depends. It's one of two things, right? It's like, so we're told that the TVA is outside of time, right? So any changes to time does not affect the TVA, right? That's at least in the beginning of the season. Up until now, we were like, okay, the TVA should be a constant. But now we realize that, like, this is obviously a different TVA. Now, is it a different TVA because multiple TVAs exist, or something in the past has shifted the course of that TVA?
Exactly.
Like, only TVA. So is there only one TVA, and the TVA's timeline has shifted and thus like messed that up where they don't recognize Loki and now we have a Kang statue? Or are there now variants of, like, each TVA has a variant?
Yeah.
Right. I don't know.
I want to say, like, at this point, that there are variant TVAs and the effects, we like to think of things as linear, and it's really what happened is as soon as he let go, everything went retroactively backwards, and all, timelines askew went, from there. So, then it's like all these variants of TVAs had been, you know, in existence because it was retroactive. That was my perception.
Well, I disagree, by the way. My belief is that there's still only one TVA, because it's going to get batshit crazy if there's not only a multiverse, but now infinite TVAs patrolling an infinite multiverse. It's a lot. So just like, I don't know. I'm going off the operation that like the assumption that there's one TVA, but that's gotten shifted.
Well, and I understand where you're coming from with that, and I kind of agree with it, but I also see the other side of it, and it's like this. Yes, the TVA sits outside of time, but that TVA is part of the universe that is that one universe, the sacred timeline. But the multiverse wasn't gone. He was keeping it away. They weren't eliminated. He was just keeping them away. And that the branches were what connected it to the other universes. So I would say a possibility, and we're not going to know anything until season two. A possibility here is that each universe has its own TVA controlling their timeline. And maybe that it was more of, not so much that he conquered all other Kangs, but it was more like he took control and was able to work out maybe, a deal, for lack of a better term, to keep everything separate as long as everybody pruned their own Nexus events to keep them from branching back together. Even though some of them want to come back and conquer it all to make it one. Because that was when he talked about the exposition, like, they all wanted it to be one universe. Like, they all, like, they were trying to kill the other ones and destroy the other universes to make their universe the prominent and single universe. So, could it have been that there was a deal worked out so each one of them has their own version of the TVA that controls their sacred timeline? We don't know. Again, there's a lot that we're not going to know for quite a long time. Now, in all fairness,
I feel like that's what it was, though, honestly, because it wasn't until Sylvie killed him that we saw all these branches coming out. And that's when we were able to see that new timeline happening within the TVA and his statue being there.
We keep saying timeline, and it's more than just timeline, because like we said, the TVA sits outside of time.
It's a different manifestation, would be a better word.
It's time-space, and it's about, you know, the multiverse. And the thing is, we might actually get answers sooner than we think, because we do have, you know, we have What If coming up, which I believe that at least one episode of What If is going to tie in. It's going to be a bridge between Loki and Doctor Strange, because the Doctor Strange episode where he goes down a dark path, there's two Doctor Stranges in it. There's also a scene that looks very reminiscent of an illustrated version of the Citadel at the end of time. So I think that episode might help bridge from Loki to what we're going to get in Doctor Strange 2. And we might get more answers in Doctor Strange 2, but we may not until Loki season 2 comes out, which hasn't even begun production yet. I know I theorized there on the after show, because there's some scenes in the trailers that were released that never got shown. But that happens. They're either misdirect images, or they're just cut scenes that they thought were cool but end up getting cut in the long run. But I had theorized that maybe they shot season 2 at the same time as shooting season 1 to kind of roll it all in. But then I went back and thought about it. Like, well, no, they just put out Production Weekly just a month ago calling for people to work on season 2. So if you're calling for people to work on season 2, if you're putting out like, hey, we need grips, we need best boys, we need, you know, riggers, you know, all that, obviously you haven't shot it yet. So it hasn't gone into production yet. So I don't know when we're going to get that.
And then keep in mind, Jonathan Majors is working on Quantumania right now.
Yeah.
And so we're lucky that like Loki season 1 and Quantumania essentially film back to back.
Yeah.
So that he was able to do that, and like they didn't have to like pull too many strings to make that happen. What's interesting about, and I'm just throwing this out there, what's interesting about like Marvel's TV schedule and its popularity is that like when we get really popular singular characters, suddenly they have a spinoff. So like, for instance, the character of Echo, who is a superhero in the comics, she is going to guest star on the Hawkeye show, but she's also going to get her own solo spinoff. And so, like, they already know that right from the get-go, and now they're having to add to the schedule already. And so for all of these seasons to also get a season 2 also means, like, yeah, Loki's not coming back until 2023.
Probably like, not. I agree. It's gonna it's gonna be a long time. Now, like,
yeah,
and that's the thing. Like, WandaVision's not getting a season two because it's she's getting her finale, or not really her finale, but she's getting her season two in Doctor Strange 2.
Right.
Falcon and the Winter Soldier's not getting a season two because they're getting Captain America 4.
Right.
But Loki is getting a season two. Supposedly, She-Hulk is already set up to get a season two.
Yeah. That makes sense.
Yeah.
Loki doesn't have a future in the Marvel movies anymore.
No.
That's
although
what I think.
Although they did tease that in the very beginning of the episode about giving him an ability to get back in. And I guess there is a way to bring him in if like after season two, but I just don't see a point.
No.
His character's run its course, and he's had his redemption arc and everything, and we're going to see more of it. As long as season two ends with him and Mobius on a beach date on a jet ski, I'm happy. But we have so much. We have Secret Invasion coming up, which I think that in the comics, Secret Invasion involves the Skrulls.
Yeah,
but I'm wondering if they're going to. Obviously, they've changed so much. Like, you know, of course, Civil War is nothing like the comics. Infinity War is nothing like the comics. Could Secret Invasion be more along the lines of something with Kang?
Yeah.
Could that be a part of? Could it be something involving that? Could it just be a?
That's what it feels like, but yeah.
Could it also be just a another effect of the multiverse? Who knows? We do know that a lot of what's coming up, at least in Phase 4, is multiverse related. Of course, there's all the rumors about No Way Home with Spider-Man. And those are just rumors, guys. The only thing we do know is that Alfred Molina is coming back. Which, I gotta be honest, like your point earlier about them only signing people to short-term contracts now, I think Kevin Feige would have been like, if it wasn't for the fact that that's a Sony contract, he might have like, there was an interview he did on the red carpet for Black Widow, and somebody asked him about Alfred Molina spilling the beans that he's going to be Doc Ock. And he had... Like, Kevin Feige is one of those guys who never uses negative terms when he talks in interviews. He's very affirmative and very positive. It took everything he had not to basically cuss out Alfred Molina for spilling the beans. Like, if you watch him, like, you see him, he gets a little red in the face. He gets, like, he's very, his words are not as quickly out. You know, he's not, it's very, so it would have been one of those things that had that been a pure Marvel contract, I think he might have been like, you done, bro. But,
yeah.
But
by the way, am I alone on this? I don't want Alfred Molina back as Dr. Octopus. Like, I want a new casting for the MCU. I could have bought Jamie Foxx as a different Electro because I think that maybe he was robbed a little bit. And he it would have been cool to see like a blue collar Jamie Foxx Electro.
Well, he also Jamie Foxx also Dillon. said it is a different version of Electro because he won't be blue. So
right.
I get what you're saying there, but actually I want to throw this to Denise because Denise, one of your favorite movies was Spider-Man 2.
I really like him as Doc Ock, but I would be interested to see what else they can do with that role because it did seem kind of stagnant at points. I think the guy from, Mrs. Doubtfire, the one that does all the makeup, his brother.
Harvey Fierstein.
He might be really cool in that role.
I think he's a little bit too old now.
I think he would be really cool.
I think he's almost 80. But to see a Harvey Fierstein Doc Ock would be amazing.
Yeah.
How cool would that be?
It's not my pick. My pick's Jeffrey Wright.
Who's that?
She would know, like, Jeffrey Wright, you've not seen Westworld or anything like that, but you saw the What If trailer, correct?
Yeah.
The guy doing the voiceover, the guy who's playing the Watcher,
okay,
that's Jeffrey Wright.
Oh, okay.
And I actually agree with that. I think that would be a really good choice. But now that he's the Watcher.
Jeffrey Wright would be cool as Doc Ock. No, but it's a voice.
That's true.
Like Vin Diesel could come in and play... a character, I guess. He's allowed. Bradley Cooper could play a character. They've only voiced characters, you know.
Well, Vin Diesel was almost going to be Black Bolt. Like he was like when they were still going to do when they were still going to do the Inhumans movie, he was the one they were talking to play Black Bolt. And apparently there was nobody
else.
He's just not good enough. But then again, he wouldn't talk at all.
I know, but he would then have to emote, and he can't emote either.
No.
Like it doesn't matter. Happy, sad.
He's like the human embodiment of Botox.
Yeah, his eyes will always say family, you know?
Yeah. Brazil. Sorry, I hate that movie. Okay.
Oh my god.
So let's talk about Renslayer.
Yeah. Yeah,
oh my gosh.
Talk about the actual biggest open door here. Mm-hmm. The biggest cliffhanger was not the villain. It was not what's going to happen with the multiverse, because we already have an idea where that's going. Where did Renslayer go? What is she doing? What is she up to?
Mm-hmm. She's looking for free will.
And what does that even mean?
She wants to be in control. That's what I got from it. She's looking to control in some way.
There was
she was a principal, apparently. Did I read that right? She was a principal.
Yeah, that's how B-15.
That's where the pencil came in.
Yeah, that's how B-15 was able to show the other agents they were variants. I thought that was pretty cool.
So I have a question about that.
Yes, go.
Why wasn't Sylvie able to bring her little boat toy that she was playing with? Like, why did Renslayer, which I don't know if you saw the degree behind her, it said Rebecca Minet, it looked like something like that. Does that mean anything?
I'll have to go back and look at that name, because it doesn't ring a bell.
It was CourMinet, and that would be like core minute. And I don't know if I'm just being a noob and like looking into things like way too much now, because I'm talking to you guys and I'm really trying to pay attention. But
But
her name was Rebecca before. So yeah. Where did that name come from?
Rebecca Corbin Murray, you said?
It looked like C O U R
C O U R
M I N E T. That was the name of the degree. I had to go back and pause it. I was what?
Corbinet?
But her name was Rebecca.
Rebecca Corbinet.
Corbinet.
Corbinet. Yeah, it's a B. Yeah, it's an M.
I mean, it just could be play off of minute.
Yeah, you know it could
like
be
just a play of words.
What I found interesting, and we got it a lot from that Mobius Renslayer discussion, was from Jonathan Majors in some of his talks too, was how he basically used like a religious dogma style to control the faith of his agents. And Renslayer is bought in like hook, line, and sinker.
She
will not let it go. And like to the point where she gaslit Mobius into saying that, no, you betrayed me. Like she's so dedicated to the faith. But yet it's still kind of questioning it. And what file did Miss Minutes give her? Like, there's too many questions around that particular part, because it wasn't the file she asked for, which was the beginning of time and the end of time. But he who remains said, that, and you notice if you watch it with captions on, whenever Miss Minutes said he, it was capitalized, like how you capitalize he in the Bible.
Yeah.
I thought that was interesting.
There was a lot of religious imagery in this episode.
But it was like he thought that this is the file you would actually need. So it's like, all right, what the hell? Like, so that to me is the only part where like a lot of people have said like, oh, there was no conclusion to this season. It was just cliffhanger. Okay, I kind of get that, but I felt there was a lot of wrap up for this season, except for when it comes to Renslayer.
Well, that was the part that disappointed me the most in this episode. Other than that, I liked it. I really thought like Mobius would be going in like, oh, 300, you know, but
that was actually adorable that he tried to attack her and she just
womp womp, we're done.
Like, why?
And that was the end of that.
I immediately felt like if that fight happened in real life, that's exactly how it would turn out. Like, I feel like she would have just taken that from him and kicked him in the chest and knocked him on the floor. Like, Owen Wilson would have gotten knocked on the floor. Yeah. That's just exactly how I felt that fight would go in real life.
I wanted to see a lot more with him going into the TVA again. But I like that he walked in there and he was just like, well, you're not going to be excited to see me then.
I'm trying to follow notes, but as you can see, they're written all over the place. I'm trying to
usually how it goes.
This is by far the worst. I was like, I almost had to flip to a second page. Like that, I was like, I'm running out of space. So, we talked about that.
Did she call Hunter D90? Who is that supposed to be?
He was just like the guard that I guess was outside the door.
Or it wasn't anybody prominent?
No, but it was. It did end up being the guy that was chasing B-15 through the high school.
Oh, okay. So
oh, that's
okay.
why he didn't come. But and I that wasn't necessarily necessary, because it could have just been that she showed this agent, who then it's like it's a game of telephone where it just it spreads.
Right.
And like, hey, we're all variants. This is all screwed up. Where something's wrong.
Yeah.
But
but why was she able to bring the pencil? Like, why?
It's
why
hypocrisy. Is what it is. It's hypocrisy.
Okay.
And that's also part of the religious dogma aesthetic, is the hypocrisy of it all.
Okay.
So
I guess I have to be satisfied with that.
Well, it's not satisfying, but that's like I said, that's my one issue, is that it's too open as to what Renslayer is going to do.
Yeah. Yeah.
So I don't know.
And so what was her event? They didn't say that either.
Well, no, they don't say what
her event was.
They don't say what B-15's event is. They don't say what Mobius' event is.
Right.
And that's something.
Sylvie.
Yeah, Sylvie, we never actually find out what her event is. But as it turns out, it could have just been that she didn't even actually technically have an event.
Right.
Sylvie may not have had an event, because she was always meant to show up there, as he said. Mm-hmm. He said that. You guys were always meant to get here. I knew everything was going to happen here. So her event could have just been the fact that he knew she was going to come. Again, that's
what's the lie, though? It could have been a lie.
Exactly.
Right. They brought up the fact, they were like, you don't know.
Exactly. Right. There was so much. And like he didn't. And he even admitted, he's like, I'm just as deceptive as you two. But then, like, there was a great. Jonathan Majors was so good. He is so good.
That was a really good character.
He was so good. And it felt like, I admit, as he started talking, I mean, I really did feel like he's been doing this for millions of lifetimes. Like, I really felt that even before he said that, because it was just that he was just slightly off. He's been on his own. His only person to talk to is Miss Minutes. Like, so that he had that little bit of a quirkiness to him. But then that moment where he no longer knew what was going to happen.
Yeah.
There was a genuine switch you saw even in his face.
Yeah. He
did that little drop thing, which I'm not sure what that meant, but it was just something like, do I know this is going to happen? Do I know where it's going to drop? No, I don't know where it's going to bounce. We're officially out of what I know. Like, it was kind of a weird moment, but there was a genuine change, and he turned much more earnest, and it was just, it was so well done. I was already excited for him to play Kang when they announced him for Quantumania, but now seeing him do this role, like just seeing this part and seeing what he can do, and he's great in Lovecraft Country. Oh man, I'm so excited to see where this goes.
What were you going to say, Jason? You were starting to say something and I just felt like you were on a roll.
Just a theory as to where, what's happening with Renslayer. I think He Who Remains gave her, a clue to go and follow. And it's all, part of Kang's reincarnation plan. And, because he mentioned it, I think, it's the broader plan of this entire phase. So you know what I mean, and also I'm also expecting them, for her to fall in love with him, because that's what we know from the comics. So maybe maybe he has already experienced or wants to experience love, and he's enticing her into his plan. We'll see how it unfolds, but there's what we know and what we can expect from the characters, and then that's kind of the guess I'm throwing out there.
I like that you said that about the reincarnation thing, because I felt like it was something that they were trying to get viewers to really, really think about, but they didn't want to dwell too much into it to freak people out. But I would be really interested to see what they do with that in the future. Absolutely. I'm glad you brought that up.
Keep in mind that Renslayer originally said that nobody has free will except for He Who Remains, right?
Or who's in charge. Whoever's in charge, right? Yep.
So whoever's in charge has free will. Nobody else has free will.
Right.
Where is she going to find free will? She's going to find Kang.
So maybe the file she was sent was his file of where he started. 31st century. Yeah, that makes actually a lot of sense.
Wow, cool.
And now I feel dumb. But that's okay. But that's what this is for.
Right.
So, that actually makes a lot of sense. And
she essentially could show up anywhere.
Yeah.
In almost any of the movies. Just
maybe she puts together a council of Kangs.
Yeah. Because that was kind of that was indirectly name dropped, the Council of Kangs. He said they got together as a council and discussed things. So that was indirectly name drop.
Maybe she's just an inevitable part of the plan that he had already said that went to fruition.
Yeah.
It's just that's a cool thought.
A loop coming back over to itself.
Yeah. And he did show that. Like his, when in his little, like, I akin it to to Man of Steel. When he was telling the story, like the silver like balls created the images.
The mercury, so his mercury, yeah, his mercury formation.
But his time, like when he talked about time, it was a circle around him. It wasn't a line. A
circle with the lanes.
Yeah, it was circular, which I appreciated. That ties into a lot of like, especially Vagabondage has a lot of theories on the circular momentum of time and all that. I thought that was really cool.
I feel like it's an infinity shape.
But is it an infinity shape?
Just the flow. It's not really circular. I feel like it bends and it has to. So I feel like it's more of an infinity type shape.
The flow of time?
Yeah.
Time space?
Yeah.
Well, I mean, the infinity shape is just a approximation of like a Mobius strip.
Yeah, a Mobius strip. Exactly. Just,
there you go. Yeah.
You know, but yeah,
it's just it's not like when you draw an infinity symbol on a 2D, it looks connected. But a Mobius strip is a three dimensional look at basically like you said the infinity sign. It's just they don't touch in the middle. There's a space, and so I can definitely see that. And that's actually that's a very prominent theory in quantum physics right now. That you know the Mobius, that's why it was brought up in Endgame and all of that. And then, of course, the character is named Mobius for that very reason as well. So I was kind of putting it off, but let's talk about it. Let's talk about the kiss.
Yep.
Dimitri knows all too well how that went on the after show.
Yeah.
That got real deep real fast.
I thought the writer said they weren't going to do that.
Yeah, I mean, that could have been another one of those things that, oh no, I'm not involved in the show, and then he shows up. So it could have been another one of those, yeah, they're not going to kiss, and there's the kiss, to subvert expectations. Although the one thing
I'm fine with it. I don't care personally.
I don't know how I feel about it, because it felt like I understand there was a reason behind it on Sylvie's side, and Loki's was completely different. But Sylvie literally did it to kind of con Loki. To throw him off guard, to give him what he wanted, and then basically betray him and kick him back into the TVA so she can finish her mission. And I felt like, one, that betrayal was going to happen. Because ever since episode 3, they keep talking about Loki betraying her. Loki betraying her. Loki betraying her. So obviously she's going to betray him. Right. But it wasn't like, I don't think it was a malicious betrayal. It was more like, I have a mission. This is all I've done my whole life, and I'm going to complete it no matter what is in my way. So I think that it wasn't necessarily a reciprocated kiss as far as feelings go. And she may be in love with him, but her mission is more important because that's been her entire life. So the kiss on her end was more of a con. I just don't know, like, and
I don't think that I was a con.
I'm not saying appreciate. I don't agree with the people who are mad that we finally get a bisexual character, but then he's in a heterosexual relationship. Because then you're basically saying that bisexual people can't have heterosexual partners.
How do we know that she's not bisexual? No, well, she's kissing ahead
she
of you.
Well, she is. Well, she is bisexual. But the thing is, regardless, like to be bisexual, you enjoy both sexes. Like, that's what that is. So you can be bisexual and be in a heterosexual relationship. So I think the attacks on that are a little bit much.
Think about the opposite, though. Think about the opposite. If you're bisexual and you're in a homosexual relationship, then you're not exploring your bisexuality.
Exactly.
Right.
What do they expect to have, like, a boy and a girl at the same time on each other?
Yeah, I guess a throuple. Yeah, like, a throuple is the only way to, like,
oh, okay.
Explore that. But then they're like, well, you're not just bi, you're polyamorous. It gets
whatever. Unfortunately, whoever has anything to say should probably look more into their sexuality because they're a little bit confused, and just leave everybody else alone.
Well, it just, it is a great example of how the bisexual community inside the LGBTQ does get flack even from their own people. And it's kind of sad because there's so many people that are so mad over this, and I don't understand it. But the other thing I will say that I actually did agree with, though, is that we did get the gender fluid Loki. He's gender fluid in the comics. There's nothing you can debate on this. All the homophobes can go jump off a short pier. I don't care. But in episode 5, we got the surprise that they're like, oh, it's weird. Oh, a female Loki? That's so weird. Oh, we had there was a gator Loki at their feet.
Yeah.
But they were weirded out by the female Loki. So I do understand that gripe. But in this case, as far as the kiss goes, I guess it was, I don't know, like, we talked about it last night. I'm not big on every superhero needing a relationship. And I felt like maybe that's what it feels like, at least to me, was that it's like, oh, well, Loki's the lead. We got to give him a relationship to show that he's grown as a person. And you don't need to be in a relationship to grow as a person. So
I don't think that's what it is. I think it came from a place of understanding and respect and love, but it doesn't actually have to be a sexual love. That's what I got from it. It just felt like a undeniable connection, which, I mean, wouldn't that happen? You either want to kill yourself or love yourself if you meet another one of you. What are you going to do, you know?
Yeah, I think I agree with that because it's, you know, it's Disney enough. You know, it's, right. It seems Disney enough, not too sexualized.
Yeah.
I'm all for, like, what if I don't know if they have a sexual relationship, whatever. I don't view them as siblings.
No,
this weird multiversal thing. I don't view them as the same because some people were like, some people view it as like, oh, it's like asexual. It's not. That's not how that works.
Yeah, no.
They are completely autonomous human beings with different souls, different genetic code. They've lived different experiences, so they're thus different people.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. They're not siblings. They didn't grow up together. Yeah. They technically don't have the same parents because their parents are different people. You know what I mean?
It's a different it's a different Odin, a different Frigga, all that stuff. Yeah.
Yeah.
So and right. I am, unfortunately, they're gone. So I don't know. If I to me the kiss felt forced in a storytelling kind of way, not in a bisexual way or whatever way people were looking.
Right.
And not in a sexual way was it forced. It felt to me like they kept teasing it and going at it. And it's just like, it wasn't, I don't think necessary. I think that to me, what I would have preferred to happen was like when he was about to talk to her and he got pruned, that it wasn't about, I love you. It was more of, I love and respect you, you know, and it was more of a respect thing. I felt the relationship was a little bit forced. That's my only issue with it. I just felt it wasn't necessary, but like I said,
I'll be right back, guys. Sorry. I'll be right back.
Not a problem.
Yeah, I don't have any things one way or another.
Yeah, it wasn't necessary. Although I will say, like I said, in the moment, it did feel a little bit like a con on Sylvie's part. It was a good distraction to get Loki off his guard to where she could get rid of him and thus finish her mission. So I guess maybe, I mean, in what they had built story-wise, it kind of was the only way to get him distracted in that moment.
Right.
So, but at the same, but again, that to me is forced storytelling. And I just, I didn't appreciate that as a writer.
We may not get any more from that, into the second season. That might be all we ever get.
Well, obviously they're going to have to.
If it's like, look, I'm going to cut these characters off at this point. At least we got to the kiss. That's how I feel.
Well, obviously we're going to have to deal with the fact that there's going to be tension now.
Yeah.
I mean, he's obviously not going to be happy about being betrayed. So that's something that will have to come up. But
are there storylines though where you've built up a relationship and then you let it fizzle out? Because I feel like that doesn't happen. I feel like.
It's really rare
in storytelling.
Yeah, it's really rare.
Not in real life. You know, it'll increase until either of them die or fall in love with somebody different. That's kind of the way storytelling works, right?
Yeah, exactly. From a storytelling standpoint, it's rare that you see it fizzle out. Like,
yeah, I don't think they're gonna shake hands and be like, just friends, and like go on from there.
Yeah,
I don't, right. I don't see that as a storytelling point of view.
Yeah, so, we did see in that moment though, arguably what is the absolute most earnest that Loki has ever been in the MCU.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
He was offered an opportunity to basically control the TVA, to be, for lack of a better term, a god again.
Yeah, yeah.
And he's like, no, I don't want that. I just want you to be happy. I don't, I want, but I also don't want to ruin the freaking universe.
Right.
What if he's right? Yeah, he could be lying, but what if he's right? Like, there was this real earnest moment out of Loki that we had not, like, it was the most earnest we've ever gotten out of any Loki, including at the end of it, or in Infinity War, you know, that, you know,
we'll never be a god.
Well, no, it up until that moment, the most earnest thing I thought we ever got was the light, the sun will shine on us again, brother. Like, that moment where he looked at him like, I'm okay, I got to sacrifice myself now. Like, there was, so that was the most earnest we had up until that point. And now this Loki, who technically, it's not that Loki, this is the 2012 Loki who got away, has arguably one of the best character developments throughout the MCU in a very short amount of time. I think he had more character growth than Tony Stark did.
I mean, don't get me started on Tony Stark.
Yeah, oh no, we could. Yeah, I agree. Yeah. You and I agree on that 1,000% on Tony Stark. He was mainly the villain of the MCU for most of it.
yeah. An easy character arc is getting your flawed character to just kill themselves. Like,
yeah.
Great.
Yeah.
Like he could have stuck around and become a better person. No.
He was selfish.
I don't buy it.
Well, don't forget he was selfish up until the end. Why are we going down this road? I'm gonna get so much hate for this.
Right.
But he was selfish up until the end. Because even he was like, hey, I want you to bring everybody back, but let's not erase what happened to me. I want to keep my happiness. And I can understand that because he wanted to keep his family. But at the same time, had everything gone back to that 5 years, he could have still had that family with Pepper. Would his daughter have been exactly the same? Maybe, maybe not. So I can understand that in a way. But it was still, at the end of the day, it was still very Tony Stark to be like, let's not change anything. Because
I don't blame him for that. I don't blame him for that.
You can't really, because like I said,
blame him from all his other transgressions.
Yes, there's so much more about him that, like, his. Yeah, okay, let's not get into that. That's Tony Stark.
So, are you ready for a noob question?
Of course.
So now we're seeing Miss Minutes develop into a very deeper character too. Like, even with her changes in tone when she's talking to Renslayer. And it's like she knows a little bit too much, and I am kind of creeped out that she can just pop in and out wherever and whenever she wants. So is she working for all of the variants of King the Conqueror, or does she have her own agenda? Is she a minion or is she a leader?
That's a good question. That's a really good question.
I figure she's a sidekick to Kang, right?
Yeah,
the AI sidekick.
Yeah, I don't think she's working for
the multiple TVA.
Yeah, I don't think she's necessarily working for
like that little slur.
But like, I don't think she's necessarily working for the multiple Kangs. But she could also she's very much like it's he who remains. But she could also have her own agenda a little bit. Like there was more to that character because her tone did very much change.
Yeah,
and it was interesting that Tara Strong, who is on TikTok, but hasn't posted since May, made a post to remind everybody in her, she did it in the Miss Minutes voice, to make sure you tune into the season finale of Loki. And that was the only, she hasn't posted for any other episode.
Wow.
She hasn't posted for any other thing, but she also did it in a very, like, she put on a really nice dress, and she did like this very like sexy Southern Belle thing doing the whole thing. And I thought that was like, I was like, what is she doing? Like, why is this all of a sudden when she comes on and decides to post her second video ever? Like, so I thought that was interesting. There could be something more to Miss Minutes. I'm curious to see what's going to happen to her because I don't believe she's working for all of them. So what happens to that AI? What happens to this program? Like, for lack of a better term, program. We don't know if there's more to Miss Minutes than just being a program.
She already said that she was.
Well, she said she's real and not real all at the same
time.
But that's
already not a program.
But that's an AI. That's the whole point of Ex Machina. Like, I'm real, but I'm not real.
I bet we're gonna find out something really cool about her.
I'm.
You know what? That sounds cool. That would be neat to, you know, just give her a little bit more depth than what, you know, just some AI.
Yeah.
Well, we definitely saw some different character, some different character traits in this episode for her, for sure. So let's talk the multiverse opening up. And Dimitri, I know your stance on the multiverse. We've talked about this on Instagram Live and on the Keek Show.
Yeah, I mean, yeah. I don't dislike the multiverse. I just, I don't know whether we need the multiverse right now in Marvel Cinematic, in the MCU. I don't know whether we need to be exploring the multiverse so soon. We just got done with Thanos, then we deal with the multiverse, and then what? Like, where do you go from there?
Well, here was something I thought about an hour before we got on here. What if the multiverse is... The reason they went multiverse kind of so soon is a way to bring in all the new characters they got from Fox. Like, especially when it comes to, like, mutants. Because
it's a device.
It's not necessarily bringing in those versions, although Hugh Jackman did throw out that little tease. But could it be that now we have a universe as part of this multiverse where mutants have always existed?
I don't want that.
Did you see the Simpsons version of Loki?
No, yeah. I haven't watched it. I need to watch
it. Only the good, 6 minutes.
The Bart and the Loki.
Yes. Yeah. And it was hilarious because they put up a sign that says, this is what happens when Disney buys Fox and something else. And it was just really funny. Yep. Yes. And so that kind of like answers your questions because they can.
I'm just like
when Disney buys Fox and Marvel.
Yeah. Right. Yeah.
But my biggest concern when it comes to mutants in the MCU is that how do you find a way to bring mutants in without bringing them in like as like something new, some catalyst happens that unlocks the mutant gene.
And I know I'm not giving you my pitch. Have I not done that? I'm not going to give you my pitch right now. We don't have 5 hours. I have a Google doc with my breakdown of like how I would do everything and whatever, but no, the mutants have always been there. They have to, they can't be a cataclysm or not a cataclysm. There can't be a catalyst, of like suddenly an old bald man gets psychic powers and he's like, I'll start a school of people with the same experience as me. Mm-hmm. Then that's just Rodney Dangerfield back to school.
Yep.
Like, why would Professor X be running a school of mutants when they all have the same experience as him? Yeah. Why would Logan be just be like walking around town and suddenly claws? Like, who?
Exactly.
Why do we want these? Yeah. Why do we want these stories where these mutants just popped up? But at the same time, why do we want a story of mutants where they didn't come from this universe? Like, why would that reduces the storytelling things? Then they're invaders from another universe, as opposed to the next stage in human evolution that we should be fearful of, like our neighbors, right? Like the whole mutant storyline. Like, all that stuff is, like, my child could be a mutant, my neighbor could be a mutant, they could be all around us, I'm afraid of people who are different, they're analogous to other minority groups. Like, we lose all of that if they're from another universe. The only way to do it is if they've been around in such small numbers, and the world as a whole has no idea that they exist until they do.
Well, here's the thing. There is a way to do it without minimalizing that. And it involves the multiverse. Because think about like Battle World, which a lot of people were talking about after episode 4.
Right, yeah.
The multiverse collapsed and everything became part of the universe. So like the Ultimate Universe became part of the Marvel 616. All these other multiverses became part of it. If they can fix the multiverse issue by the end of whatever phase 4 or 5, whatever they're going to do, integrating the mutants from another universe, then like, but you're integrating the entire universe, like all the universes, you're bringing them back down, so that the history of each multiverse becomes part of one now unified universe.
Yeah, Crisis on Infinite Earths kind of.
The mutants have always been here, but they haven't always been here. If you get what I'm saying, like they're, You're
it works in comics, but it doesn't work for mainstream public. Denise, you're the noob. I always try to stick up for like I've been reading comics for a long time, but like I also know that like a lot of people haven't. And I don't know whether people want these like things where like Tony Stark is dead in one universe and alive in the other. Like, what's the big deal that people die then? You know what I mean? How does this work with like the way the mainstream public views things?
Well, even before all these movies came out, Vince would tell me a lot about what was going on because he had, what was the name of that huge book that you had of all the characters and their backstory?
Oh, I had the Marvel Encyclopedia and I had the DC Encyclopedia. Yeah. Oh, yeah.
And it was really cool to look at it. And I'm like, but why are they even trying to mess with the storyline? Like, why can't they just dive deeper into this character? And I feel like maybe they're just being money hungry. Or, I mean, but it is really fun to do something else with another character. And they can. So I guess it just depends on your preference. Are you like a diehard fan and you don't want to see anything else and you just like the way that this is? Or are you willing to do a choose your own adventure book and see what else can happen? So,
well, yeah. I think that the multiverse will not stick around forever. I do think there will be a conclusion where it's brought back together.
Yeah, that was my next question. What is everybody thinking? Like, if it's going to stay split, or is it going to go back to your unified?
Yeah, I do think they'll find a way to, because it's going to be like if we leave this wide open, it becomes just a mess.
Yeah,
I just don't want people to get punished if they don't like the multiverse. If they just want to stick to the character the way it is,
somehow,
you know what I mean?
Unfortunately, you can't please everybody all the time. But here's the thing, because I know there's rumors that we're going to get Tom Cruise as Iron Man and Doctor Strange for a quick cameo.
No, I disagree. Please. I don't think Marvel is going to let Tom Cruise anywhere near Marvel.
I agree with that. I don't think it's going to happen either, but again, these rumors. But there's also talks of, you know...
What about Jim Carrey? Who could he be?
Are we doing fan casting right
now? Let's do
All right, who would Jim Carrey be?
Let's do a quick fan casting. Who could Jim Carrey be in the Marvel Cinematic Universe? I would say a villain. I think he would do great as a villain.
He would be good at as a villain, yes.
Is he back to doing comedies again? I don't even...
I mean, kind of. Like, he is doing, like, he's doing Sonic 2 coming up.
I really liked that movie. That was really good. He did a great job.
Yeah, he was fantastic in it.
Yeah.
He carried that entire movie.
My pitch for an X-Men movie has Arcade being one of the villains, but more of a down-to-earth Arcade in a weird way. So kind of like Ultimate Universe's Arcade mixed with Arcade from the 616. But basically, he's working with the human supremacist. He is a human supremacist. He's the tech guy. He's making traps, making all these different things. He has his flamboyant personality. I think that Jim Carrey could be a good Arcade.
That's cool. I'm going to have to look that up. That's interesting.
If you wanted, I also, and this is going to sound weird, but I actually would like to see him play Norman Osborn.
No, that role is like beneath him.
I don't think so, because Norman Osborn in the MCU will be a big bad. He'll be a player for a long time. He won't just be Green Goblin like in Spider-Man 1 and then killed off and dead. Like, they have so many stories that, like, they're kind of teasing it with, like, this Dark Avengers they've been doing, you know, thanks to, you know, the end of Falcon and Winter Soldier and the end of Black Widow and all that other stuff. So they've been teasing this kind of Dark Avengers / Thunderbolt kind of thing, and Norman Osborn plays a big part in that. I think a well-done Norman Osborn in the MCU with Jim Carrey, because Jim Carrey can flip that switch from serious to maniacal.
Yeah.
Like, the movie number 23 is a great example of that. So I think that would be a cool casting, but I really like the Arcade. Like, I think that would be amazing. Like, that would be like what the Riddler was supposed to be in Batman Forever. That was what it was supposed to be. And it was just too much of the neon light, Joel Schumacher nipples on costumes version.
Right.
But I think that would be great. So,
are you ready for noob question number 2?
Yes.
All right. So what was his actual name? If or it was it just He Who Remains, or did he actually have like a name?
That's all he was calling himself at the time.
He's credited as He Who Remains.
Yeah.
You would call him King.
So like people are calling him Kang because they know that Jonathan Majors is playing Kang in Quantumania, and they mentioned the word conqueror in the 31st century. And yes, it's Kang. But even in the credits, he was not named Kang. He was named He Who Remains. So as far as the episode goes, he is He Who Remains. And He Who Remains is the comic book creator, is the one in the comics who created the TVA. And that kind of plays into like this new TVA thing where we have a possible multiple TVAs. Because in the comics, when the He Who Remains originally, he created Time Twisters first. But the Time Twisters ended up not working out. So he made a more perfect version in the Time Keepers and then went back in time and stopped himself from creating the Time Twisters. It thus created two branch realities, one with Time Twisters, one without. And these two different versions of the TVA kept battling each other. That's why I feel like there's multiple TVAs, is because it was in the comics. And that's all I have to go on.
Well, so, I have a question for Dimitri.
Okay.
So whenever Kang, then, like you said, when he was at the desk, you saw him get really, really heated about saying that he harnessed, or he created Eliath and harnessed
He found Eliath, and then he changed him or whatever. He
manipulated him.
That's the thing that got him really, really upset, though. Where do you think that comes from, as far as what you know? Because you see both Sylvie and Loki be like, wow, okay, we weren't expecting him to be so emotionally attached to what he just said.
I don't remember, actually. I'm trying to think of that scene and like how he reacted to it. So
he said it twice. He was talking about how it was he is the one that set that forth, and it was for a purpose. But it was kind of like, and what I got from it was that maybe he had disapproval from the other variants, as far as that goes.
Yeah. Or that he was the smarter one, that he was able to do it. Like somebody here said this Kang or whatever is the benevolent one, but I don't think he's benevolent. I think the benevolent Kang's got killed right off the bat.
Right.
I think he's maybe more middle of the road, willing to make the hard decisions to get to why he's the final Kang.
He made that point very clear. Is like, we've all done horrible, terrible things, but for the greater good. So benevolent, it may not. I said that, but it's not exactly the right word. But it was just a quick, lack of a better term, word. But yeah, so he's done terrible. It's like terrible things for good reasons. I think that part of that anger may have come from the fact that we talked about a superior Loki throughout the whole season, right? Who's a superior Loki? I'm a superior Loki. No, I'm a superior Loki. That's going to happen with somebody like Kang as well. You have a council of Kangs. Yeah. Who's the superior Kang?
Yeah, and essentially, has happened.
And him being the only one seemingly able to control Eliath, who appeared because of the multiversal war. He was a product of the war. And then he was able to harness
reality.
Yeah, he was able to harness and control that. He thought himself the superior Kang.
Right.
And when they kind of like dismissed Eliath in the way they said it, because, ugh, Eliath. Like he was that kind of upset. So that I saw it as him getting upset over them kind of dismissing this amazing thing he did. And it's about superiority. So, we've already hit the hour mark. Let's go ahead and start wrapping this up. Let's get final thoughts on the Loki season, starting with Dimitri. What are your thoughts on the season?
I thought the season was good. I don't have any complaints. At least now we know we're getting season two, which is good. I got my Kang at the end. That's what I wanted. I think that this is more of a comic booky show than like Wanda and like WandaVision and Falcon Winter Soldier were. So like there's going to be more fans getting on board Loki versus WandaVision and Falcon Winter Soldier, where they were kind of divided on that because of what you want from a show. I think this one's more in line with like the comic books and the comic book fans and the MCU as a whole, where like WandaVision and Falcon Winter Soldier were kind of like trying to chart their own path. This was like, let's lean into it, you know? And so I don't have any complaints other than just the idea that I want to see more of what's going on and try to answer those questions. And I have faith that Marvel knows what they're doing as far as the multiverse and the timelines, because as like a science fiction fan, there's like so many different ways you can do multiverse, and I'm sure they know that already. So, I mean, I have no complaints.
Denise, what are your thoughts on the season?
I still have a lot of questions. I'm still trying to figure a lot of things out. There are a lot of things that I still would like to understand. For instance, when he gave them the printed out pages, kind of like they did when he first went through TVA and he had him sign the paper of everything that he says, I was looking at it and it said that Loki was L1130. And then it said his line, and then it would be like me and whatever King said, and then it would be L1190 for Sylvie, which is still, to me, would mean Loki. But I'm like, okay, but she's supposed to be, she came before him, like why wouldn't she have the 1130, you know what I mean? So it was, there's just a lot of questions. I'm looking forward to season two, understand it a little bit more.
All right, Q.
I think it was great writing. I love that this entire adventure was a way to show how the MCU is going in the future and its movies. I love that it has to do a lot with the multiverse. These are subjects that I appreciate on a personal level, outside of comics. So it's really interesting that, I get my comics and, these interesting and metaphysical, ideas about existence in my entertainment. So I'm having fun. Can't wait to get more of Loki in season two. That's great news. That is such good news because, if we had all this excellent television in the first season, it's going to be a great run in the second one. And it's really exciting. The studio is doing a great job of pumping up the audience and getting them excited for newer content. So they got the machine working good, and it's on point.
Awesome. For me, I think Loki was the strongest of the three series thus far. I love WandaVision, love Falcon and the Winter Soldier. I almost feel like with each show, like the show release schedule got mixed up because of, the 2020 Panera Bread issue. But I think that the release we got now actually worked better. Cause that, for me, strength wise, I think it went WandaVision, Falcon and Winter Soldier, Loki. I think they've gone stronger with every series. It's like, I know they're not looking at it and going, okay, how can we improve off this? What if, because they've already been shot. It's not what they're doing, but it almost feels like that. Like, it's just a stepping stone of better quality. I'm very interested to see where season two goes. I'm very interested to see where the MCU goes now that we've opened up this can of worms called the multiverse. So it'll be very interesting to see what's coming up. We've got some great stuff coming up. Before we say goodbye, I want to talk about next week because obviously there's no more show. So what are we going to talk about? Well, we've got Black Widow to discuss. We've got the What If trailer. We've got the Shang-Chi trailer. We've got the Eternals trailer. We've got a lot of other stuff coming up. So there's going to be plenty to talk about next week, so don't worry about that. Before we go, Dimitri, once again, tell everybody where they can find you.
Yeah, if you want to find me specifically, you can find me on Instagram at This Is Dimitri, D-I-M-I-T-H-R-I. But then as far as the Keeg is concerned, follow the Keeg on TikTok and Instagram at The Keeg Show. We also got live streams at volume.com/The Keeg Show and other live stream platforms. And we also have our podcast on Apple Podcast and other podcast platforms.
Awesome. And as always, please like and subscribe. Comment down below your thoughts on the Loki season, any other theories you've got going out for season two, for the multiverse, whatever you've got. Let us know what you think. Please hit that notification bell so you know when more episodes are coming up. These podcasts come out every Thursday at noon Eastern, 9 a.m. Pacific time. Also, you're going to find it on podcast mode on Anchor.fm, Spotify, Google Podcasts, iTunes, all that fun jazz. So, once again, Dimitri, thank you so much for joining us. I greatly appreciate
it. Thanks for having
me. Thank you, Dimitri. Pleasure. You.
And we will see everybody very, very soon.
Bye. God bless y'all.
Bye. See you.